We're going to do something a little bit different in this podcast. We're going to talk about impending illness because I feel it coming on. And Nocturnal Thoughts, an easy talker for podcast 867, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Well, when we get into winter, getting a workout in every day, if you can do it, is really helps you stay. At least if you're going to get sick, you're not going to get as sick as you would if you didn't. I think it's really important. So let's talk about fitness for a minute. Now, there's lots of big box gyms around where you can go work out, and they have varying levels of service. And I could tell you about this place called Fitness Together in Edina and Maple Grove, but it's better if some of the people working with personal trainers at Fitness Together tell you about it. And here's the Johnsons. This is a couple that's just trying to get fit, and they're going to tell you why and what their Fitness Together experience is.
Bree Johnson.
Josh Johnson.
People understand the personalization thing because that's been so key for us. It's just I'm a runner, and so I wanted to complement my running and work on things that added strength to my running because I wasn't doing any strength training before. And so it's been so neat to have our goals and kind of talk about them, and the trainers just know what to do for us. And so that's great, too.
Well, I think the other thing, too, it's just it's nice to be able to, like, have everything turnkey. Like, all you do is just show up, and it's A, accountability, B, you just show up. It's, like, written out for you. I mean, I still belong to, like, one of the bigger gyms, and it's just like, I'm like, what am I going to do today? I find myself wanting to get back in the same run. Like, well, let's just do chest press, like, total dude, you know. You feel awkward, like, doing anything that we kind of do here, like slam balls and like all that kind of stuff, and it's just way better here.
Google and then search in reviews. It was a big thing for me is to try to find reviews, and it has pristine reviews here, 5 stars, and so that's pretty compelling with a lot of reviews. A lot of people say how much they love it.
Fitness Together is private personalized training and nutrition, and that of course means private training rooms, no waiting or distractions, privacy and time efficiency of your workout. Everybody is unique, and they can get behind that and help you out with that. Fitness Together is for you. Call them in Maple Grove at 763-494-0061, in Edina at 952-927-0300. Two easy locations in the Twin Cities for you to get around depending on what part of the metro you're in. FitnessTogether.com, or you can click on the banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com, and that takes you to their contact page, and you can click on either the Edina or Maple Grove store and let them know what your problem is and what you want to do and what your workout plans are, and they will get back to you, and you guys can work something out. Fitness Together. Well, you often hear me talk about manufacturing, and there's a lot of things going on with manufacturing. A lot of companies that are manufacturing products are being asked to do it back in the United States by the president. And so if you're in the decision-making chain at a company that is in a position of looking for an American manufacturer, you need a great American manufacturing company. Please remember DepoStar, American design, engineering, and manufacturing right here in Minnesota. Visit their website at DepoStar.com or click on the banner for DepoStar at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. I'm going to jump right into this. And the reason I'm going to jump right into it is I really dislike all of the table setting and preparing people for what you're going to talk about that podcasters seem to enjoy doing. Hey, how you doing? Welcome back, YouTubers. Hey, it's a beautiful day in our nation's capital, and blah, 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 blah. I'm going to jump right in. This is an easy talker. I don't have notes. I'm going to say things that are probably wrong. Just want you to know that as an open disclaimer, because when I don't have time to fully research what I'm going to talk about, because I don't know what I'm going to talk about, you never know what's going to be right or wrong. Usually it's details, little details, but the general trend of the thinking is really for your thoughts, for you to sort of kick off or to be thought starters for podcast subscribers and listeners. And that's, you know, when I used to do talk radio, you know, I found that when you didn't prepare and you just talked, if you said something like garbage cans are green by some way of trying to explain something else, those things are what people would call about. Well, no, garbage cans are brown. And the garbage cans, because the garbage cans in their town are brown, and you end up going down that rabbit hole. Thank God for podcasting, because we don't have to take calls. But anyway, I'm going to do an easy talker because this is my way of sort of doing a consolidation podcast, where I've done a lot of these podcasts recently, either interviews or they're fully prepared podcasts. And every now and then I got to do one of these podcasts where I just talk, and this is one of those nights. And by the way, they are not easy to do for me, because one of my pet peeves is the kernel of what I want to talk about usually comes up halfway into the thing. And that goes against everything that I was ever trained to do. And it also goes against what I want to do for you, which is to just give you what I'm talking about and get it done. So it's right out there at the beginning and you know what it's going to be. But when I do these kinds of podcasts, it's not easy to do that, because it's down in there, and that's why I'm talking, and that's why I'm doing an Easy Talker. So I should call it a Not Easy Talker podcast. And I'm also going to mention, by way of another disclaimer, that I am on the very edge of my schedule flipping. I'll explain that in a second. And on the very edge of perhaps getting sick. And that I'll explain first. So everybody in Minnesota is either super depressed because winter seems to have come early. We had snow. Now, don't freak out. People from other parts of the country tend to look at any snowfall in Minnesota at this time of the year, or any snowfall in Minnesota, as being extreme, that somehow we're under 14 inches of snow, blah, 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 blah. That is not what happened here. Mostly it was ice that fell out of the sky. That's that's kind of the snow we had this weekend. But it has been a little chilly, and the sun is going down early, and many of us are depressed because we have to say goodbye, and it dies hard. You know, we have to say goodbye to summer. Now, summer is long gone. Obviously, it's fall, and fall is a transition period. And there is a transition period that we have to make, and one of those transitions has to do with sleep schedules. Most people who live in this part of the country are morning people. That has been my experience. They get up with the sun and they go to bed with the sun. And in the winter, their only adjustment is they go to bed earlier, right? I am nocturnal. I'm the kind of person that should be living in Las Vegas, where you can go have dinner at the casino at 4 o'clock in the morning, or lunch at the casino at 4 o'clock in the morning, where people are going to work at 7 p.m. and instead of 7 a.m., and it doesn't matter. You've got three shifts a day of anything, whether they work at hospitals, they're police, they work in casinos, they work at all-night restaurants, or whatever it is that they do. That would be a better place for me than a place where everyone still has the farm genes, where they've got to get up at 3:30 because the cows have to be milked. Even though they're not living on the farm anymore, that's how they still operate. I have never, ever, ever operated that way. I am a fully nocturnal person and always have been. I can remember sitting on my the roof over the back porch when I was growing up. I'd climb out. At first, I had the front window. And I never thought to climb out on that roof because my parents' bedroom is right next door to me. And then when I got a little older, my sister moved out and went to college, and I got the back bedroom. And so I was probably 12 or 13 or 14. And during that period of time, I had that back bedroom, and I would open up the back window and climb out on the back porch and sit on the roof out there all night long. Or in the summer, I mentioned in a couple of podcasts, I would sit on the front porch and listen to the radio all night long, and literally up until 3:30, 4 o'clock. And then you know, I'd wake up at, I don't know, whatever time I did as a kid, probably earlier, 8 or 9, and then go do my thing. What happens to me is during the summer months, when you're heading into spring and summer and the days get longer and brighter every day, there's a sense of optimism, and being nocturnal feels really fun because you get to stay up late and you can sit on the back porch. You know, instead of over the back porch, I can sit on the deck, or I can sit out on the front porch, or whatever I do. Take walks. It's warm, and there's a feeling in the air of an expectant feeling of positivity. Let's just put it that way. And so being nocturnal is great because the sun comes up early and, you know, all of that. But when you're going the other way, being nocturnal is a challenge. And I've found a couple of times, you know, through this, that the older I get, the more difficult it is to be nocturnal. And my schedule starts to flip. By that, I mean I start to stay up later and later and later, and pretty soon I'm wide awake. It's 5:30 a.m. and I'm wide awake. It's 6:30 a.m. and I'm wide awake. It's 7:30 a.m. and I'm wide awake. And at the same time, you're trying to go to sleep, so you're really not working or being productive. And eventually, this gets to be ridiculous. And this weekend was the weekend where it became ridiculous, where this morning, so we're talking about Sunday morning, I looked at the clock. It was 6:30 a.m., still wide awake. I thought, well, I better go to bed, you know, laid down, tried to sleep. Then it's 7:30, then it's 8:30, then it's 9 o'clock, 9:15. So I looked at the clock and I said, well, you know, if I don't go to sleep pretty soon, I'm just going to get up and I'm going to, eat something and I'm going to go off on my day, even though I'm tired. Okay. And then I sort of fell asleep and then I woke up and I looked at the clock and I thought, oh, I'm going to look at the clock and it's going to be 11 o'clock or whatever. And I guess I'll get up. Well, the clock was 5:17 p.m. That's when so I had ended up sleeping a full, whatever it was, 5-6 hours and woke up. And of course, it was 5:17 p.m. And so that really ticks me off because what I can't – too late to go to certain yoga classes I like to go to. So to make a long story short, I'm at that reset stage. And what that looks like is I have a seasonal affective disorder light that will reset my body clock if I employ it. So what you do is you just sit in front of that thing for 20 minutes at a time. And if you do it a little bit longer and you sit in front of it a couple of times a day, it rapidly resets your body clock. It takes about 24 to 48 hours and your body clock is reset and you're waking up at 7 o'clock again. The only problem with that is I hate getting up at 7 a.m. I hate being up that early, and I hate being up during the day. So I'm looking for a happy medium. So that's – and I'm a little bit ticked off about it. Now, on top of all that, in addition to the schedule change, we're all getting sick in Minnesota. And I think part of it is just people are depressed because they know winter's coming and we're all getting colds. And these transitions are really difficult. And I notice this because I do yoga every day. And I know when you're engaged in physical activity every day, you go through physical changes and you can really feel those transitions and you can really see other people going through that as well. And so I do like to get into the studio at least once every day, and it really bugs me when I miss yoga class. So today is another, I took two days off this week, basically yesterday, meaning Saturday and Sunday, and then I'll get back to it. But I'm all out of sorts, and I'm also feeling maybe my fatigue and my difficulty sleeping because I'm falling asleep in front of the television and I shouldn't be tired is due to whatever is going around. I can sort of hear it in my voice and I can see it with my friends that are getting this as well. So that's kind of what's going on. And I don't know that I have the ability to concentrate long enough to actually do one of these podcasts where I research something and then talk about that thing like the Corruption Podcast. Felt great when I did the Corruption Podcast, podcast 868, and not so sure that I want to even engage on issues in this podcast because just feeling out of sorts. I think there's a lot of people in Minnesota that are feeling out of sorts right now, and I thought I would mention that. So in the second half of this podcast, I'll try to address a couple things that are kind of on my mind right now, and we'll see how out of sorts and crazy I am from whatever this illness that's going around is in the second half of this podcast. So if you have a business and it's growing, and of course we all work really hard to make our businesses grow, and when that starts to happen, as you know, it's always something. And so for some of you, payment processing becomes kind of an interesting problem to deal with. And I'm going to make a suggestion for a payment processor that can help small businesses, and that, of course, is ReliaFund. As you grow from being a tiny little micro business like my own to being a small business and then a medium-sized business, you need a payment processor processor that can grow with you and that can integrate its systems with your systems seamlessly. And this is what ReliaFund does. ReliaFund is a payment processor that's been providing integrated solutions to get payments cleared for more than two decades. So they were at the outset of the payment processing revolution in this country. They have no long-term contracts. They're seamless. They're secure. I've been working with them for over 2 years now, and they're great. And they're technology focused, which means they can integrate their systems with your systems. Doesn't matter what your deal is, this is what they do. So if you want to send out, you know, payment invoices or things of that nature, they can help you with that. Here's the number, 866-243-5040. That's 866-243-5040. If you call them, you will talk to a human being, Kevin Hill or Greg Lowry, or check them out online at ReliaFund.com. That's ReliaFund.com. Or click on the banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com, and you will be put in touch with their CRM, which is real good for explaining what your problem is and what you want them to help you with. That's how I found ReliaFund at ReliaFund.com. And now here's another way that I am saving the asses of small business. You know as well as I know that I know already that you hate your printer. Most people do in business, or even if they're just printing stuff at home, they hate their printer. Why? Because they hate paying for print cartridges because they're super expensive. The solution is Cartridge World in Maple Grove. They can save you up to 30% compared to the big box stores, and their cartridges are guaranteed to perform as good as new. Free delivery on qualifying orders. Remember, Cartridge World in Maple Grove off of Weaver Lake Road between Dairy Queen and Subway. Also for Roseville, you call 763-420-6632. 763-420-6632. Ask for Jason. They will hook you up, or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com that says Cartridge World. And I am glad that it's the second half of the podcast, because I don't want to go on too long about these things. I just want to make a couple of observations that have occurred to me in the last 24 to 48 hours that I think are of interest. People have been texting me, and from people in Minnesota and people from all over the country that I know have been texting me, and they've been asking me if I went to the Trump rally, because the Trump rally was national news that happened here in Minnesota. And I want to talk about it a little bit, because I think it's interesting. So when the candidates or political parties or causes do rallies, the reason they do the rallies, aside from personal self-aggrandizement for the candidate or the religious figure or the president or senator or whoever's doing one of these rallies, the reason that they do them is really about retail politics. The reason that they do them is today, it used to be, candidates went to diners and talked to people, or they had coffees and or dinners of some kind, and they still do that, and they would have fundraising dinners, and people would show up and to a $4,000 plate dinner. And of course, they'll all be doing this as we get closer and closer to the election, because they want to raise big money from big money donors as well. Some candidates, and the president I would include in that group, are much more populist, and they thrive on getting out and pressing the flesh with actual real quote-unquote people, and that's fine as well. I'm not making an editorial judgment against that or for that. But the real reason they have these rallies is to collect phone numbers and get donations to the campaign and line people up to work in the campaign. And for that reason, they are important. But in the case of the president's rallies, I don't see how they are really news, except however many people came to the Target Center to get in. And of course, it's always overbooked. This is the point of why you do these things. You do them because you do them to overbook. And of course, he overbooked, because they always do. And there was a bunch of people waiting in line and blah, 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 blah. And I don't remember how many people the Target Center holds. I thought it was something like 20, but it could be more. But I think it's something like 20,000. And now people have said, oh, there were 60,000 people there. I don't think there were that many, but I don't even know. And if I'm wrong, then correct me. I would say I think Target Center holds something like 25,000 people. And that's big. I mean, that's nothing wrong with that number, but it's always exaggerated. And I get these notes that say, "Hey, did you cover the Trump rally?" So here's my thinking about the Trump rally, or the whoever fill in the blank rally. If you go down there, you're going to be either on the side of the people that say F Trump with their signs, and they had a really good time out there protesting, or you're going to be on the side of the people that are going in to see Trump. And I want to explain a few things about Minnesota to people so they understand. If you're listening out of state, then this will help you understand what this was. So before I do that, I just want to say that regardless of which side you're on, in my view, you get sucked into this thing and you go to this thing and you're part of this thing. You're part of the experience, whatever the experience is, which to me is a false experience. And so I've said that, I've outlined that, I've talked about that ad infinitum. The idea that what is going on politically, the whole thing is a giant manipulation, whether it is whether you're against the president or for the president, you're part of the problem. And it doesn't matter if you're protesting against the president or protesting for the president, you're part of the problem. And how do what do I mean by that? Well, here's what I mean by that. I watched a video recently on YouTube of Robert De Niro, who's been famously against the president. You know, he's an actor. He certainly is not a policymaker or an elected official or anything else. He's just an actor. And he was on some Sunday morning show, which nobody watches, and was basically talking about how Trump shouldn't be president. And the host of the show poorly continued to press him about why he doesn't like him or what the problem is and so forth. And during that whole period of time, Robert De Niro uttered not one single specific reason why he didn't think the president should be the president. You know, and again, you might disagree with this. If you're a Trump supporter, he could have introduced issues about the economy. He could have introduced issues about foreign policy. He could have introduced issues about the impeachment thing. Any number of things that he could have said that were specific, but he couldn't think of anything specific, so he just kept spitting out these rhetorical statements. And when people talk about Trump in terms of supporting Trump, it's the same thing. You know, it is a steady stream of rhetorical statements and very little specifics. So if you support the president or if you're against the president and you go to these rallies and you go to do whatever you do, you're part of the problem. And that's the first thing. And so what happens is when media goes out to report on something like this, it is a produced event. The people with the signs are part of the produced event. The president is part of the produced event. The people going in with their MAGA shirts and hats and the, you know, praise Jesus, it's Trump or whoever, that's part of a produced event. And the whole thing, in my view, is a giant manipulation because specifically the real systemic issues in our government are not being debated or discussed. Whether you are, you know, someone who believes that we need to have less government or someone who believes that the government just needs to be fixed so it can work better or somebody who believes we need to have more government. The substantive issues that we need to talk about are not being talked about. So when somebody says, are you going to go cover the Trump thing? I would say, no, I'm not. I stay as far as I can away from that stuff because that's not news. What do you mean it's not news? It was on national news. And what specific thing came out of the rally that's news? Nothing. So that's a sort of almost part of the con. It's part of the life in the matrix that this thing is going on. And I mean, it's going to result in an election. Somebody's going to get elected or not get elected, and not get elected. And there's going to be people voting and so forth and so on. And they're going to vote on whatever they want to vote on, and that's fine. You know, I'm not going to say that's wrong. But to me, just from my vantage point today, I'm just not interested. I don't have any interest in this because nothing is going to come out of this. And part of the reason is I've covered a lot of these things. And I will cover more as we get closer and closer to the election, primarily in Iowa. And it's the same thing every time you go into one of these things. It's people who really, really, really want to be there one way or the other. And they know they're going to be on TV and they know what they're going to say. And there's really nothing to talk about. And I thought, for example, when I covered the primary, the primaries and the caucuses in Iowa in 2016, I thought, well, you know, this is going to be real. This is going to be the real stuff. This is going to be real politics. This is going to be great. And I'm going to really learn about retail politics, so to speak, where people go out and they press the flesh and they talk to individual human beings. And I've said this 100 times too. That is exactly the opposite of what I saw. What I saw were produced events, one after the other, with the same people coming, running out to the television cameras to express their quote-unquote views that are supposed to be, you know, off-the-cuff real people playing, you know, play-acting because they know what the TV stations expect and they know what the cameras want because they do this every 4 years. And I kind of thought, there's nothing to see here, folks. It took me a while, but that was my final conclusion. Sorry if I'm sounding jaded, but that's the truth. So for me to have covered the Minnesota GOP convention in 2018, so that would have been in the summer of 2018, the Trump rally is the same thing. In fact, most of the same people were there, except just a few more of their friends. So that's the first thing about understanding the Trump rally, at least editorially where I come from. I don't need to go there. I don't need to talk to those people one way or the other because I almost, and I'm saying almost, I still – you know, refused to – I still refuse to say I will not be surprised. I want to retain some sense of being able to say, you know, I saw a really surprising, unique thing, and it's worthwhile to talk about. That's something I'm going to hold on to in my heart because that is a politics we used to have. I'm not so sure we have it anymore. I don't know how far back we used to have it. Maybe that's a Norman Rockwell painting. But I would like to think that there's something out there that will surprise me someday. But in the meantime, I'm not. The thing that, that people need to understand about these rallies, and in particular the rallies in Minnesota, is more than one person said to me, the mayor of Minneapolis made some comments about how we don't like Trump here and he's not welcome. And many of the Republicans that I know were very upset about the comments from the governor and the mayor of Minneapolis. A couple of things. First of all, the mayor of Minneapolis is a figurehead. The only thing that the mayor of Minneapolis really controls in the city is the fire department and police department. I think they've taken the fire department away from him. And he's left with the police department and a few other minor tasks. So at the most, the mayor of Minneapolis is a figurehead to absorb lightning. He's a lightning rod, right? And the real power in the city of Minneapolis are the city planners that are professional people that they that work for the city and the city council president. Those are the real powers in the city of Minneapolis. Notwithstanding the fact that Minneapolis is about as Democrat as it gets in the United States, I would hazard a guess that Minneapolis is more progressive slash Democrat than Chicago today, or maybe even Boston. And I would say that Hennepin County, which is the county Minneapolis is centered in, and Ramsey County, which is the county that St. Paul is centered in, these are two of the most Democrat congressional districts, at the very least, and two of the most Democrat counties in the United States. So when it comes to Republicans in the city of Minneapolis and the city of St. Paul, we'll leave out the congressional districts, but in particular, the 4th and the 5th district, right? 4th is St. Paul, 5th is Minneapolis. You can count the number of Republicans that exist pretty much on one hand. Most people that live in Minneapolis don't know any Republicans. And if they do, they consider them strange people that ride bikes and, you know, old – that had been riding bikes since they were 12 back in 1952. So it's not like they're bike path people. They ride around on Schwinn's, you know, from 1963, or they're really old or they're just odd. And most of the Republicans in Minneapolis and St. Paul aren't even libertarians. Most of them are very religious Republicans. Again, this isn't a judgment on you people. This isn't something, you know, I'm trying to make you feel bad or anything else. This is just the truth. So when people say, oh my God, you know, look at the president filled Target Center. Even when Obama was there, they said, oh, Obama filled Target Center. Well, Obama easily filled Target Center with people who probably live right by Target Center, because in Hennepin County and Ramsey County, it's a short hop, skip, and a jump to get there because all of those people are from those two areas. Very Democrat areas, very progressive areas. So it's not a surprise that Jacob Fry, the mayor of Minneapolis, would say the president isn't welcome here, because the truth is, in Minneapolis, he's not. And in St. Paul, he is not welcome, meaning they are not cut from the same political cloth that President Trump is, with an R in front of his name, even though he's really a nationalist populist and not a Republican. But that's another project, you know, podcast. So that's the first thing. So the second thing people need to understand is that most of the people that were in that arena come from these relatively sparsely populated communities outside of the cities. So we're talking about, you know, Stearns County. We're talking about Anoka County. We're talking about Isani County. We're talking about Mille Lacs County. We're talking about some parts of northern Minnesota. We're talking about western Minnesota. So if you do a search for, you know, Minnesota 2016 presidential vote by county and get a map, you're going to see a map that's very red. First of all, you need to understand that a lot of those counties are that was 52% or 55 or 56%. Some of them genuinely 70% Republican vote. But Minnesota Republicans, as I have outlined in other podcasts, aren't necessarily like Texas or Tennessee Republicans or Kansas Republicans. They are generally fairly liberal in their views, with the exception of abortion. And they are very loyal, which means they will support the guy. And the guy in this case is Donald Trump. So a lot of those people, and I know a lot of the people that were at that rally, a lot of those people are not residents of Minneapolis and St. Paul. They're residents outstate. They're residents, and certainly valid, and certainly valid to have those people working in the Republican Party to try to turn out more Republican rural votes. But when they talk about turning Minnesota red, they're not talking about people from Minneapolis and St. Paul voting, or Rochester, Minnesota, where the Mayo Clinic is, voting Republican or turning votes. They're talking about getting more of those sparsely populated Republican counties to vote, to get more people from those sparsely populated Republican counties to vote in 2020, so that the president can get perhaps a little bit more advantage where he won, he lost Minnesota by a very small margin in 2016, something like 46 or 47 or 48,000 votes, you know, less than 1%, as I recall, or maybe 1%. Although he also won some places by less than 1% as well. Michigan, I want to say Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, which came in very late with very tight percentages for the president. So it could have gone either way. Well, that's the same thing with Minnesota, although, yeah, I'd say it's the same thing with Minnesota. So the chance that Trump could win Minnesota, well, it's there, depending on what happens in terms of voter turnout. But I want people to know, when they see this rally or hear about this rally on television, that and when I say television, I mean cable television, that a lot of these people are – this is not Minneapolis-St. Paul people. Minneapolis and St. Paul proper, very Democratic, and most of the protesters, they are the ones from Minneapolis and St. Paul. And none of that is to make anybody feel bad. I just – you know, here's the thing. We've got a situation with – Turkey, Iran, and Russia and Syria. We're talking about withdrawing troops from Afghanistan and withdrawing troops from Iraq, a potential international situation brewing there. And the media is talking about people think that we had, you know, hundreds of thousands of troops in Turkey. The withdrawal, my understanding is, amounted to at the most 50 U.S. Special Forces observers and trainers who were with the Kurds, and they were withdrawn so that there would be no international incidences if Turkey decided to start shelling or moving troops into this region after they warned the president they were going to. The other thing is, for all the people criticizing the president, Republicans as well, and you know, I'm certainly not in agreement politically with President Trump, but I will say this. When somebody does something and they said they were going to do something, then you know, I don't have any problem saying, well, this is what the guy said. So Trump, since he's been elected, has been talking about pulling troops troops out of that area. And at one point, we added troops because his commanders on the ground asked for it. And that's when Mattis was Secretary of Defense. And so he said, well, if that's what they need, then that's what they need. He has wanted to withdraw U.S. troops from Syria for quite some time. Most of the troops that we have there are support personnel for special forces, missions involving the Kurds to try to defeat ISIS, which the president claims has been done. You know, on a broad scale, you can say, well, no, he hasn't done that. But on a broad scale, ISIS is generally, and I say that tentatively, out of Iraq, which was the main reason to eliminate them and to eliminate them as a potential terrorist threat. This is the way he wants to do it. He's the president of the United States. There are a lot of people in this country that don't believe that we should be involved in these foreign conflicts, and especially not in a cauldron. But having said that, let's put it all in perspective. And this is something I did want to talk about. We're talking about a 34-kilometer swath of land, 50-kilometer swath of land between Turkey and I think it's northeastern Syria and northwestern Iraq. So this is not withdrawing troops from Europe. This is a very small number of specialized personnel doing a special thing. Did we abandon the Kurds? Well, I mean, that's something for a longer podcast, and it's something that everybody needs to sort of make conclusions about in their own mind. But I would say this, you know, Turkey's a member of NATO, so they are supposed to be a U.S. NATO ally. Now, we can revisit that. We can decide if we want them to be in NATO, but cleaving, allowing Russia and, let's say, China to cleave Turkey away from the Northern Atlantic Treaty Organization, which was designed to contain Russia's expansionist ideals, is kind of problematic. And it's kind of a question that people should be thinking about, which is why I said during 2016, you guys need to be thinking about what kind of foreign policy the United States should have. And it fell on deaf ears because nobody cared, because Trump was going to fix everything. So the only thing I will say is he's wanted to do this for a while. This isn't anything new. This isn't something that he thought up. This isn't some erratic foreign policy goal. It's something that he has said on more than one occasion that he wants to get us out of there. Maybe that's a good thing, especially if you have, you know, family members serving over there. Maybe it's a good thing. I don't know. And again, it's something that we're not getting enough information on because we're too busy covering things like rallies, which really aren't news. So in the state of pre-sickness, I apologize for offending anyone, but those were really three things and two things that I wanted to talk about to kind of say and put things in perspective. Now, I could go on and talk about the questions regarding the economy. There's a number of really significant things happening right now that are happening below the surface because we're too busy talking about Shep leaving Fox News as though this had some great national import, and the president talking about ratings on a cable channel, on a show which come or go, nobody's ever going to really care in 5 years what happened to him or where he went or anything else. And why should that be national news or any of the other things that we tend to spend and waste our internet space, our brain space, and our time on thinking about? There are things going on that are significant economically, financially, in terms of the stock market, in terms of economic growth, in terms of the future. There are things going on with the repo markets. There are things going on in terms of foreign policy, and they're kind of continuing without too much coverage, and maybe that's how they want it. So once again, if you're on the bandwagon one way or another, just remember you're part of the problem. All right, it's time for me to go. I think I need to go back up and watch my favorite show now, which is Succession. It's so great. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on iTunes or TuneIn. iTunes is changing with the new system. They're doing, you know, new iOS. They're doing some things. They're splitting things up, and I'm going to talk about that in a future podcast. I'll explain how that works. But you can subscribe to the podcast right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. You can listen to the podcast on streaming audio or specific podcasts at thebobdavispodcast.com, Stitcher.com, Spotify for Android devices, TuneIn, blogtalkradio.com, Google Play, and more. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast, Podcast 867.
Why do we never get an answer when we're knocking at the door with a thousand million questions about hate and death and war? 'Cause when we stop and look around us, there is nothing that we need in a world of persecution that is burning in.